about, right?
Yeah, I made a sausage sandwich for lunch.
Ooh, like breakfast sausage?
Yeah, it was like hot Italian sausage.
Oh, wow.
And I cooked it in spaghetti sauce with some onions, and I put it on this bread, and it was probably the best lunch I've had all day.
Oh, the best lunch you've had all day?
Yeah.
In comparison to the other lunch you had earlier this afternoon?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had ramen and bread with butter.
Like as a sandwich or
separate? No, just on the side. But I put the ramen on the bread.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
a lot of starch.
Yep. Pretty rough on the stomach here.
Yeah. So Tom, how was your week? How are you doing?
It's going well. Had a really productive week. Got a lot of stuff done. Having Monday off was nice, so I could kind of get set up for this next week.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I had a pretty good week too. I met some of our British listeners. They were very interesting. Fun, exciting people, you know?
I'm very excited that we have British listeners.
We talked about one of the people I met was a blogger, and I talked to her about how she overcomes that kind of writer block period where you don't have any topics to write about, but you still kind of have to force yourself to write so you don't just stop altogether.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. She had some good insight, you know.
And she was...
I'm not going to share it. I'm not going to share the insight.
No. Yeah, I mean, that's hers to share.
Yeah.
You would probably muddle it up.
I would muddle it up. No, essentially, it was that having a good network of people to suggest things was how she got through it. So she started, and then it kind of started to build on itself. So now people suggest topics, and then she can kind of pick the ones, and that works out really well.
Hey, this is a good time to shout out to our listeners and say... suggest stuff for us to talk about.
I think maybe you caught on to what I was doing there.
I did. That's why we work so well.
Yeah. On that note, we actually did get some feedback from one of our listeners. This is regarding last week. We talked a little bit about the plural of octopus, which is of course octopedy. And this nice listener was nice enough to point out that according to the Oxford's English Dictionary, octopuses, octopi, and octopedes are all legitimate. Of course, you know, that's a little, like, they added that in because people were doing it wrong. So that's why they added in past octopedes.
Yeah.
Which is clearly the best pluralization.
So if I say octopussy enough, they will put it in the dictionary?
Yeah, it'll be like that word tatterat. Are you familiar with the word tatterat?
No, I'm not. It makes me laugh when I hear it, though.
Let me grab a definition of this. So the word tatterat is T-A-T-T. A-R-A-T. It means demeanor or disparagement, person, an unruly person, one in stability. That's very... Okay, so this word is tatterat, and it was created in 1887, I believe. You know, some author just used it, and then people said it a few times, and that was good enough for Oxford's English Dictionary. So I feel like if you said octopussy enough times, it would become a word. Yeah,
I would need to get a few other people to start saying it.
Yeah, preferably
another
not.
Shout out to the listeners. Start saying it.
Yeah.
Well, don't they have like at the end of, you know, there's a certain time in the year that the Oxford English Dictionary sort of
comes out
and says. These are what we're adding.
No. You're thinking of Webster's Flavor of the Day Dictionary, where they feel like they can just make up anything they want. Put some letters together and call that a word.
But then when do they add them? Like, isn't there an addition every year?
Like, yeah,
new words that get put in.
I suppose because they need to sell more dictionaries.
Which is disgraceful that people still buy dictionaries.
It's like phone books.
Except those are free. I mean, you can use those so your kids can, like, if you have like little kids over for dinner and you don't have a booster seat, sit on the phone book.
You need to start a fire, you can do that. Or if you're making one of those projects where you have to drop the egg from on top of the building, you could use the phone book as padding.
Yeah. Okay, speaking of phone books, the apartment that I live in, last spring when I left town for this summer, they handed out all the phone books. Right?
Okay.
I just moved into this new place, there is still a pile of phone books in the entryway. Like, more phone books than there are units in this building. So I think other buildings, like, brought their phone books
it's
here.
Just the company comes back year after year, and nobody takes them ever.
Yeah, there's probably, like, one from, like, you know. What, could we safely say we stopped needing phone books in 2006?
Well, by a conservative estimate.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not being very conservative on this one.
There was... So I lived in the same town in central Minnesota, and we had phone books on our front step for at least a year or two. This is like outside on the steps. And in Minnesota, you know, it's getting snowed on and rained on all year. So there's just like this one solid chunk of like this like green and yellow slop that at one time had been paper. And the thing is, like, once you kind of forgot, like, it was out there and it got rained on right away, so no one wanted to touch it because it was kind of gross, and it was a door we never used because there was, like, a chair on the other side of it. So I would actually suggest that you be proactive here and go and get rid of all those so that they don't get gross.
Yeah.
All right.
You have to walk around the building to get to the dumpster. Seems kind of like a lot of work.
Yeah.
Probably not going to do it. And they're really nice for when, like, when I moved in, you could shove them under the door to keep the door open.
Yeah,
that's nice to have a couple down there for that. Yeah. But virtually useless.
So one of the things you wanted to talk about this week, Tom, was political campaign ads.
Yeah.
And I don't really want to do critique of current campaign ads because I think everybody hates them.
And they're pretty much all bad.
But there was some interesting topics that kind of came up on it because you pointed... Well, maybe I'll let you explain what you were thinking about. So,
well, I guess I've... You know, we've all seen a lot of them this time of year. And it seems like every single ad has sort of a basic formula. They start out the first two-thirds of the ad. They attack their opponent. And they show this, like, really... Like, almost... A lot of times it's, like, darker kind of photos of, like... that president or that senator doing things bad. And then it's like these quotes by sources that they claim they have cited, but you know they're probably not true. Like, 9/10 of Americans were unhealthier because of this person. You know, they have these blanket statements, and then the last probably 10, maybe 15 seconds, they start saying, like, positive things that the person that the campaign is for is going to do. But again, they don't actually say anything. They sort of focus on, this person's really bad, so I'm a little bit better. Please vote for me.
Which is a fantastic form of rhetoric, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just wondering if, is that easier to, you know, it seems obviously it must be easier to put somebody down rather than build yourself up on an individual campaign. And I'm curious as to why, if it is successful, why other companies and other people making ads don't use this same formula.
So the main question that comes out of this is why is, you know, one politician just making an attack ad on another, and then like Pepsi is not making an attack ad on Coke? And I'm using this example because in a bit we're probably going to talk about the Pepsi challenge, which is, you know, a direct attack. But there's a few reasons for that. Essentially, The bar for libel, proving libel, on political figures is much, much higher. So then certainly on individuals that are not political, but also on companies. So if you take out an ad saying, like, you know, this company did these three things really bad and all of the baby seals are dead now, against a politician, it's going to be harder for that politician to prove that you were being libelous. Whereas if you said that against a company, it would be easier for them because the bar is lower.
Yeah.
A part of that is to protect freedom of speech, of course, that, like, we need to be able to not censor political ads, because otherwise you could just sue your opponent for libel constantly, and then they wouldn't be able to run any ads and they'd never be able to win.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I guess that I also think that a lot of times, like, politicians, to make a political ad talking about all the good things you're going to do as a politician is seemingly not very effective, because everybody that's going to vote for you already knows those things.
Mm, yeah.
So you say, well, a bunch of people already want to vote for me. I'm Barack Obama in this scenario. And then here's why they want to vote for me. But there's a bunch of these guys who want to vote for Mitt Romney. So instead of trying to change what I do, I'm just going to show them that Mitt Romney's a bad person and hope that by default they decide to vote for me.
Yeah. So they're attacking the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose a lot of private companies also need to kind of grab the middle. But there's a lot more room for just getting new customers, which is why they need to prove benefit rather than scare existing customers onto their platform or prove the harm of their opponents.
Yeah. I mean, I also think that the other issue is there are very few products that have just two suppliers. I mean, there's a few of them, like we said, Pepsi and Coke. A lot of the cell phone companies, it's starting to become that way.
Yeah, so but if Verizon, I mean, a lot of the cell phone companies do a little bit of this. They'll say, you know, faster speeds and they'll actually name their direct competitors. But most of the ad is about how good they are, not about how bad their opponents are.
Yeah.
With cell phone companies, I think there's a few enough, there's a small enough number of companies that, the service providers at least, that most people can understand when, you know, if an ad is criticizing two of them, they're probably going to default to the third one. The Pepsi challenge is a great example of actual attack ads. They're spun very positively. The entire thing is about how good Pepsi is, not necessarily about how bad Coke is. But this campaign has actually been running since 1975.
Yeah, I didn't realize it's that old.
I was incredible. Flabbergasted, which is, you know, a really long time to be running. And it's obviously changed since then. But essentially, it's this public setting, and they kind of film it like it's a very low budget, and they just kind of like hidden cams, kind of like a candid camera, and they mm-hmm. record people and they say, hey, try Pepsi, try Coke, and then they show the people like, oh, I like Pepsi so much more. One of the reasons they can get away with that is because they're showing something factual, which is like, of this challenge that we did, you know, 2-1 people preferred Pepsi over Coke or whatever their actual number is.
Yeah. I mean, it works. And I think the biggest thing is that it has now, since, as we pointed out, it's been around for so long, that I think Coke isn't going to do anything about it, obviously. So now, if anything, I feel like Pepsi could start making it more of an attack ad.
Yeah, and of course the irony is that those ads probably benefit Coke about as much as they benefit Pepsi. Because the product is so ubiquitous that all they have to do is get people wanting, you know, flavored sugar water, that since they're both so widespread, they don't really need to make new customers, as just get customers to start buying soda, and by default, like, about half of them are going to buy one and about half are going to buy the other, or whatever the actual split is. You know, they're not trying necessarily to switch people over at this point. You know, in 1975, maybe that was important.
And then the other flaw, as it's pointed out on Wikipedia, and it's something my dad's actually mentioned to me before, and I thought he was just blowing smoke. Now it's on Wikipedia, so yes, I can trust it. The
information Bible.
Mm-hmm. But it says that in the book Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, he presents evidence that says that the Pepsi challenge isn't necessarily a legitimate argument if Pepsi or Coke is better, because on a sip test, more people are going to pick Pepsi because Pepsi is sweeter. But when it comes to drinking an entire can or a whole glass of the beverage, it may change the outcome because of the higher, you know, I guess they probably have both the same amount of sugar, but Pepsi is, you know, arguably quite a bit sweeter than Coke with that first sip. So, I mean, nobody drinks a sip of pop and decides which one they want to drink.
Well, I mean, so the Pepsi challenge, they're still saying factually this group of, or like, people mm-hmm. generally preferred Pepsi in this challenge, but that's why they say in this challenge, or, you know, however they describe mm-hmm. it in the ad. A pretty clever marketing, though, and it seems risky, even though it definitely wasn't risky. because they had really good control over it. It seems risky enough that I think that's something that can draw people towards advertisements, is, you know, like, oh, they're kind of trying something new, and maybe it would have gone the wrong way. Or like, what if Coke had been more popular? Like, ho, but obviously they won't show a commercial where they're like, we challenged people and they all liked our competitor's product more.
they just want to have aired it. Yeah. They just would have went to a new town and done. I'm sure there are a lot of places they did the Pepsi challenge and people did prefer Coke. They just didn't show it.
Yeah. And then the numbers they gave were a huge average. So you just do it until you get the average you want and then you stop.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's officially how you're supposed to do surveys and polls. You do it until you get the average you want and then you stop.
Stop polling. Although, I mean, they have continued to keep engaging. And I think that's another good thing that they have is they go out into the public. And I think that excites people. Like, you know, I don't know if they still do, but they used to have the pins. Like, I did the Pepsi challenge. People get really excited about it when they would come to your town.
Really?
So, yeah. I mean, I remember when it came, I was in like probably like fourth grade and they were doing it somewhere like in Minneapolis or something.
What?
I remember like my parents' friends were saying they did it and...
Huh.
I don't know. Just the idea that there's a chance that you could be in a commercial excites people, I think.
Yeah. People do like...
Follow it. Makes them...
Yeah.
That's why reality TV works.
I suppose that is.
And because people are slowly getting stupider.
Let's go ahead and jump into the commercial that we're going to talk about today.
Domino's oven-baked sandwiches beat the taste of Subway's 2-1. Then Subway's lawyers sent us this letter demanding we pull our commercials off the air. I was going to burn the letter, but everything's better when it's oven-baked. Let's roll the commercial.
Domino's oven-baked sandwiches beat the taste of Subway's 2-1. How much is 2-1?
This jump represents the number of people who prefer Subway. Now Domino's. That's 2-1.
Domino's oven-baked sandwiches beat Subway's in a national taste test 2-1. Yep, Domino's.
I don't know exactly when this ad aired, but I think it was during American Idol. This YouTube video was posted in 2009, so I would imagine like late 2008 or whenever that American Idol season was wrapping up.
Okay.
And this was following some ads that they had been running. So the premise of, I mean, at first they were running ads where a guy in a sandwich shop orders a sandwich for delivery and like a Domino's driver delivers it. And then the guy in the shop was like, oh, no, I don't want that. I work at Submart. I'm going to order Submart. And the logo for this mythical Submart looked a lot like the Subway logo. And then they came out and they actually did kind of a Pepsi challenge style claim. Like, in our tests, you know, of every three people, two of them preferred Domino's sandwiches, which is obviously easy to control and probably very unfair. So the Subway lawyer sent this cease and desist saying you gotta stop doing that. And then in this ad, he just sets it inside of their toaster and burns the letter. I remember this ad airing on television, and I remember really, really liking it and thinking, I want to order a sandwich from Domino's just because this ad is not necessarily funny, but it strikes that rebellious spirit in me.
Oh, yeah. It definitely makes you think, like, yes. Like, I want to be with these guys because they, like, don't care about laws.
They're fighting the good fight.
Oh, yeah. Nothing can stop Domino's Pizza from making subs. You know, there's nothing that can... They'll just throw it in their oven.
Yeah. And then, you know, this ad, they air it in a few different ways. This ad continues and gives kind of this illustration of what two times looks like. So a dog jumps into a pool, and then another dog jumps into a pool and goes twice as far. And that's their illustration of what two times as much looks like. And that's a pretty common trend in television ads, which is, I think, similar to Family Guy, where they just kind of randomly pick something that's unrelated to their main topic, and then they preface it by explaining what it is, and then they show you exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And then that's the joke.
I think this was done a little bit better than Family, a lot of the stuff in Family Guy. Just because I think that it caught me off guard when they're like, here's an example of what, you know, 2 times 1 is. Because I was thinking, you know, here's a building and here's a building twice as tall. Here's somebody that's 3 feet, here's somebody that's 6 feet. No, here are two dogs running and jumping into a pool. I've never seen a dog jump 24 feet into a pool before.
That was pretty
cool. Caught me off guard. At the same time, they were both pretty impressive. So I didn't really realize that one was that much cooler than the other one.
Yeah, I don't have a frame of reference for how far a dog should be able to jump into a pool.
No. So I just thought it was sort of, in that way, kind of made me laugh right at the end of the ad, which is good.
I really would be interested to see this ad without a shot of the sandwich. That, I think, would be an even ballsier move for Domino's. Because they almost got away with it. Like, up until the end, you know, it's just the CEO talking to the camera, and then he sets the letter inside the oven, and they could just cut to the Domino's logo, and then, like, the product almost doesn't matter at that point. Because now they're not selling anything other than that rebellious spirit or you know, that kind of, like, we don't care attitude.
Yeah. I mean, the first time I watched it, I finished the ad, and I didn't even think about, like, what the sandwich looked like. I didn't even think about, like, what could be potentially on this sandwich. Like you said, I just wanted to buy a sandwich. I mean, it wasn't even a sandwich. I just wanted to buy something from Domino's.
As a side note, I would not recommend to our listeners that they buy a sandwich from Domino's.
I've never eaten one.
Yeah, they're maybe about what you'd expect.
Better than Subway?
Well...
That's like saying I own a car that's better than a bicycle.
Yeah, they're not really fair comparisons. One of them has vegetables. The freshness of the vegetables is often in question, but one of them actually is a sandwich. The Domino's sandwiches are basically just pizza. Yeah, so I can see how this kind of relates into campaign ads and political ads, because they actually did name their competitor. And then, unlike a campaign ad, they're allowed to have some fun because it's not a serious issue. It's two companies selling sandwiches.
Yeah.
It's still not a direct attack. You know, they're not saying anything that's not true either, which is a huge thing, because you can pretty much get away with lying in a campaign ad.
The one thing I do want to point out is that even though it wasn't directly an attack ad, like, as we talked about, they were selling that rebellious spirit. In a way, it made me think Subway is just a bunch of, you know, tattletales. They're going to their lawyers. Therefore, you know, I didn't want to eat Subway equally as much as I wanted to eat Domino's after watching the ad.
Huh.
So
going into this, you're saying
just
that
the thought
this,
of a guy sitting there writing the cease and desist letter. Like, dude, seriously, just man up and make a better ad.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
are you familiar with the, I think it's Audi and BMW magazine ads. So there's a variety of these ads that BMW and Audi were running against each other. I want to say they started in magazines first. So in some car magazine, there's this BMW ad. It shows a picture of a BMW, and on the top it says, "Congratulations to Audi for winning South African Car of the Year 2006. And then underneath it says, "From winner of World Car of the Year 2006. And then there's an Audi ad that, you know, presumably came out in a magazine soon after. It's, "Congratulations to BMW for winning World Car of the Year 2006. From winner of 6 consecutive Le Mans 24-hour races, 2000 to 2006, which is some Formula One race.
Yeah.
So they're having this exchange. They actually brought it to billboards. And so there's a giant billboard with an Audi, and it says, "Your move, BMW." And then across the street, BMW puts up one with a picture of BMW that says, "Checkmate." And then, you know, they escalate from there. My favorite part of this is that there's this fantastic ad. I'm not 100% sure this has been printed in magazines, but I imagine it has. It's a guy in a suit in a dark room. He's sitting on a nice leather couch. I assume it's probably the CEO of Bentley or some high up at Bentley. Got the Bentley logo on the bottom, and he's just flipping the bird. There's no text. It's just the logo and a guy. And, like, for this joke to work, you have to be in on it. And, like, nobody's going to buy a Bentley because of this. But really, no one's going to buy an Audi or a BMW based on those other ads either.
No. But I'm sure as a car enthusiast who followed this campaign, it was pretty successful.
Yeah. This is the sort of thing that really gets people talking. It's a lot of fun for everyone. And it seems like an attack ad where everybody is enjoying it.
Yeah.
One of my favorite campaigns. I don't know where any of this ran. I'll try to grab some stuff and put it in the show notes. The show notes, of course, are at thewhitehorsecourier.com. And you can get links to everything we talk about in this episode. Just fantastic. Just really, really good.
Yeah. But what we should talk about, because, you know, it's getting to be that time of year where manly men like us sign on to our laptops, sit alone in libraries.
I don't know where you're going with this.
And monitor our fantasy football teams.
Oh, God. It's true. It's very true. Very, very true.
We recently both joined fantasy football leagues. Not the same one.
Not the same one, thank God.
I got invited into mine by my brother, who's a pretty big sports guy. Knows quite a bit about it. Gets really excited about it. They needed another guy.
Because actually a men's only sort of thing, right?
Oh, yeah. No, we actually, last year we had my sister in on it. And she did not represent women very well. I'm sorry to say.
I would wager that she will do better or did do better than I will do this year.
She did. She actually would like get really lucky, but it was
sure. Yeah, you can call it luck. You could say it's luck. Sure.
Yeah.
That sounds like something a loser would say. Yeah.
Well,
they're just getting lucky. This controller's bad.
This controller. Oh, there's something going on with the TV. My TV's. I don't know what's happening.
Oh no, I was at, all right. I joined this league that my cousin set up. And I know a little bit about football. I understand the basics of the game, and probably most of the rules. I think I know most of the rules.
It's a pretty simple game.
Yeah, it is really, really simple. And I certainly enjoy watching football, especially if I'm with people that are enjoying it and know about it, because they kind of help me along. I have no idea who's good or bad. Like, I recognize a lot of names, and I could maybe guess what team they're on. But I really, like, if you said two names, I would not be able to tell you who was better. And I'm sure that everyone else in this league that I joined can.
Yeah.
Most
people that play fantasy football can.
And there's lots of stats there. We just did our draft. There's lots of stats. I didn't really understand a lot of them. So I took the strategy of I just tried to sign as many Johnsons as I could.
How many did you get?
I think I got like 12.
12?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot of Johnsons.
Yeah.
And only two of them were free agents.
You signed a free agent in your fantasy football league?
Well, I signed two because they had John. But one of them was Ocho Cinco, right? Like, is that Chad Johnson? He's going to be on a team. Like, he'll be signed.
No, he's probably not going to get picked up.
No, he's going to get picked up.
No, like, he punched his wife.
What?
Yeah, no, like, it's like, I'm going to quick look this up. I don't think he's going to be playing in the NFL. It does. Did you know, do you know what the word estival means?
Estival?
Estival.
I've never heard the word estival before.
Let me double check.
You sure you're not trying to say festival? Because I do know what festival means.
No, I'm trying to say estival.
Estival.
Let me make sure I'm saying it right. Pull up my
Maybe it's estival.
Estival could be.
Not estival. It's probably what you were saying. What does it mean? You're leaving me hanging.
It means summer.
Summer?
Estival. Belonging to or appearing in summer.
That's weird. Okay, use it in a sentence.
They don't have a sentence here.
Well, make one up.
It's an adjective. Okay, the sun, it was an estival festival. It was a summer festival, but it was an estival festival because it's belonging to or appearing in the summertime.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a terrible sentence to explain it.
It is. Okay, so it was an estival evening, and I spent it on the lake.
Ah.
I spent the estival evening on the lake.
Did you go fishing while you were on said lake?
I went fishing on a river, actually, a couple days ago.
Yeah, what did you go fishing for?
Catfish.
Do catfish taste good?
I don't know. We didn't save them to eat.
Oh, okay.
But,
Are they fun to fish?
They're very fun to fish for. I didn't catch any.
Naturally.
The fishing pole that I had didn't really work right.
This controller's broken. That's why I'm losing.
Well, like, it was, I don't know. I went with Jesse, and he had, like, he had to buy another, he had to go to Walmart first, because he had to buy another fishing rod. And there was another girl with us, and so they had the two better ones. And a few times, like, when one would hit, I'd, like, help reel it in.
Okay.
And they were a lot of fun.
Why didn't you just jump in and grab them with your bare hands?
Pretty sure it was a pretty gross river. It was late at night.
Yeah.
I didn't want to get in.
And they hang out on the bottom of the river, don't they?
Yeah.
Kind of an ugly, slimy fish.
Very ugly. Smelled terrible.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was a really fun, cheap evening, you know? It was very Minnesota of us to go out and fish all night.
Yeah.
So it was fun. But yeah, so I was, because I was looking for names for our, we're having a show for the summertime. Like, here's what I did over the summer show.
Oh, okay.
At the vault.
Yep.
And everyone was like,
you should take a step back and explain what this is.
Oh, so at St. Cloud State University, where I go to school for art and graphic design,
we have separate things, just to clarify, two separate degrees.
Yep. Very separate things. And so at school, we have a student-run off-campus gallery, which is one of the only off-campus galleries that's ran completely by undergraduate students.
Mm-hmm.
And the gallery is called The Gallery Vault. And we have a lot of shows featuring student work. This year, we have a couple professional artists from the Minneapolis Twin Cities area that are hoping to come up and show in our gallery. A lot of exciting things going on this year, and we're kicking it off by doing a summer show where the students from our student union are going to show the work that we've been doing over the summer, kind of get it back in gear, invite everyone out sort of for an evening at the gallery. And the show is called Estival Work Days.
Ah, nice.
That's how I got to the word.
Estival Work Days. Great. Everything comes full circle.
Yep. I was excited.
Yeah. When does that show open?
Show opens on Thursday at 7 p.m.
Do you have a date for that Thursday? Because this medium is not live, so people could be listening to this in, you know,
and they could say
2025.
Thursday the 6th. Thursday, September 6th at 7 p.m.
of 2012.
2012. Gallery Vault, located at 113 Fifth Avenue, St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Yep.
If you're in St. Cloud, come downtown. We'll have some signs out.
Yeah.
You'll see it. If you're not in St. Cloud, it's probably not worth it to make
No. If you're not in St. Cloud, hop on a bus and ride because it's right by the bus station. Easy commute.
This is true.
It's an easy commute.
Easy commute from...
I mean, Big Lake.
Big Lake, Minneapolis.
There's that Big Lake connection. Isn't the bus go from St. Cloud to Big Lake, and then you get on the light rail to go to Minneapolis?
It is. Don't think one is going to be... The issue is, if you do take that bus,
you're doomed.
You won't catch a bus back
at 5 p.m. Yeah, that does not work well if you're not commuting at specifically like 9-to-5 job hours.
You better book a room. You got a lot of crap to edit out of this episode.
I you know what? I'm okay with it because I think we could maybe leave most of it in. I'll cut out that juicy bit in the middle.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, it went pretty well.
Yeah. I think it's worth noting here that there have been some problems with the server we're using right now to host our audio files. So yeah. If you've made it this far in, you've obviously figured that out. We're going to be switching that around pretty soon. We've got some big news coming. So just stay tuned and, you know, get really excited. In the next couple of weeks, there'll be some good messages dropping. You can obviously follow us on the whitehorsecourier.com where the episodes go live. You can also import the RSS feed into iTunes, which is the instructions for that on the website. Right now, we're not in the iTunes podcast directory. So there's instructions on the website if you want iTunes to subscribe to the podcast, which helps a little bit. But, you know, we got some news coming soon, so stay tuned.
Big news. Make sure you are following us on Twitter at WHCourier.
Mm-hmm. Or you can follow just me. I'm at Will Imholt.
And I'm at Tom Wixo.
Yeah. And we look forward to hearing from you soon.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, my mind's still limber, but my heart's grown old. From the time I left the only place I know. And it makes me happy we didn't let go. We couldn't stand to see our love just decompose. Now I've been walking home nearly every night. And here's to everyone I ever loved but had to leave behind. For the one thing I can't find, though I've been looking half my life. And it's damn hard to explain, but I will try it if you like. Takes a certain kind of love to bear this blow, but it's not the type of romance of the old.